Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody. How are you? It's Saturday, the 2nd of October. Don't know where the year's gone, but here we are in the fourth quarter. And yesterday, unfortunately, was my sister's birthday. I'm not saying it like I didn't want her to celebrate another birthday, but God damn, when some boy gets her birthday, it's always a big deal. It's always all about me. It's the greatest day ever. Shout it up. I told her that every year. Like, nobody cares about your birthday. She hates it. But that's that brother sister thing, you know what I'm saying? Love her.
Ooh, God.
Huh?
I said, ooh, we, it's just, you don't understand as a, you probably didn't have to really deal with that. You have a daughter, right?
Yeah.
But they weren't raised. Once you get in the household
Correct.
With that, when you see that what people call vitriol, it just don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and it's almost, yeah, even if these people love each other, they cannot mm-hmm. stop themselves from backbiting and petty bickering. It is
Take a shot.
It is
we still
so
take
genetic.
Shots.
It is so ingrained in our
what we
DNA,
do.
Like, even if I know people who will shoot you in the forehead right now, Lee, over their brother, okay? Over something their brother said you did, okay? But if they in the room with that same man, if they in the room with him and it's Thanksgiving,
can't stand them.
They running each other down with them old, ran over. Shut up with your hairline peeled back like Stevie Wonder. Shut up with your teeth to my next tooth 1 mile.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up with, you know, it just does not end.
It doesn't. I love her to death, but I had to talk trash to her, you know, because it's just too much. She just.
Which number child?
It really is.
Which order, what ordinate number is she?
So she's after me and Sean. So she's not the baby, but she's next to it. She's next to
it. Is she the only girl?
No, there's one more. There's one more. There's Vanessa. Vanessa's the youngest.
The second girl?
Vanessa's the youngest. So the Vanessa's the youngest. Youngest.
Right. So maybe she's lost in a sea of siblings and needing to show
herself. Yes.
You know, just
she
lost.
Be she
in
thinks
she's
cute. She thinks she's cute. She ain't cute. She ain't cute. I keep telling her she's cute. She thinks she's cute. She thinks she is. I keep telling her she ain't. You know. She almost 50. I'm still telling her she's cute. So, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, her husband thinks she's cute, and that's all that really matters. You know, it's just that sibling thing, man. It's that sibling thing. That's all it is. You know, it's a beautiful situation. You know, my brother Daryl, he took ill with COVID. He has Delta, the Delta variant. And actually, my brother Milt has it, and my sister-in-law has it. So, but Daryl's coming out of it. He's on the end of it. And he hit me up the other day because it was his birthday. So he was born a week ago. So we chopping it up. And he's like, yo, you good? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. You didn't do me anything. Now, you my little brother. I'm supposed to ask you for something. You know that ain't going to work. That is never going to work. We got brothers that are older than us who always get hit up before you ever get hit up. I leave you for the nieces and the nephews. They supposed to hit you up. I will never hit you up. That ain't going to happen. If I hit you up, the world is coming to an end. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. But, yeah, you know, it's just – but it's that loving, caring spirit. My Milt hitting, he was like, bro says your sister has COVID. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, man, just found out. You know, she walking around here all sicked up, blah, blah, blah. I hadn't eaten in a couple of days. Got tested. She popped positive. They're all vaccinated, though, which is good. So she's coming out of it faster, too. You know, he just found out he had it like 2 days ago. So, man, I'm telling you. Yeah, this thing here, it seems like a never-ending cycle. Yeah, it really does, and a lot of that is because, you know, folks are still walking around here not believing that this is real, not believing that they have to wear a mask. I saw a post the other day from, I don't know if it was Instagram or TikTok or whatever, young lady went to a doctor's office. Don't know what level of doctor because it didn't start at that point, but she went to be seen. She refused to wear a mask, talking about she had a medical condition. The more and more she talked, comes out of her mouth with nothing about a medical condition. She says that at one point she was raped and gagged. So she has a phobia of wearing a mask. But she's never said that the phobia was declared. She never said that a doctor said that this was her situation. You know, I went to a store the other day, locally, I'm wearing a mask. Other people aren't wearing a mask because the store doesn't mandate that you wear a mask. It suggested it, but it didn't mandate it. And I'm like, yo. How many of these folks are walking around? I'm sorry, if you're fully vaccinated, didn't mandate. How many folks are walking around who are faking the funk like they are vaccinated or fully vaccinated and have never gotten a shot, only got one shot, but they don't want to deal with the quote-unquote perceived headache of wearing a mask or whatever, and they're just walking around all willy-nilly. And just sicking folks up, you know. I know New York City as well as, I think it was California, who recently started letting people go in the healthcare profession who were not vaccinated. You know, man, this is serious. Dog, this is serious. This is not a game. You know, businesses are looking at this and hospitals are businesses. Like, they are opening themselves up to lawsuits if people are not vaccinated that are supposed to take care of those who are sickly. Now, you know, there's always going to be some exceptions, and religious purposes, healthcare purposes of the healthcare workers themselves. They may have some underlying issues, and you know, you deal with those case by case, one on ones. But in mass, just to walk about and not be vaccinated or not take precautions, that's just not going to fly. It's not going to fly at this stage in this disease. It's not. And people need to recognize that.
I can't count, Lee, how many children arrive at my building without masks in the morning. And this is every morning. I mean, you know it's a pandemic. We had told you that we're going to be sitting in the same class together, if not, you know. We're telling these parents to send these children. You know, we got protection at the school, yes. But you need to have a mask budget for your family if they leave the house. I mean, it's not $100,000. We're talking about $20, $30 that you set aside for masks for your family. So staple them together if you have to. Get some old cloth. I mean, what I'm saying is don't keep sending your babies out without protection. I mean, you will not believe it, Lee. We go through at least 3 boxes of masks a morning for them just jump, you know. And it's not the bus. You can't get on the bus without it, right?
Well, okay.
You can't get on a school bus without a mask. So I'm assuming the bus driver is running through hers. But as soon as the baby jump out of their parent's car and jump into the school, we have to start handing them out like candy. How?
But I was just about to go there. So, you know, you're going to allow your kids to ride in a car and not have to wear a seatbelt. You're going to allow them, if they're not large enough for a seatbelt, you're going to allow them to ride in and not be strapped up in a booster seat or something of that nature. But and that's cool. So you're gonna protect them in the car, but not protect them in the classroom. In the car, they're with you. 9 times out of 10, you're the one driving. 9 times out of 10, or your significant other is driving. 9 times out of 10. You're not going to allow them to be in the back seat or be in the passenger seat without a seatbelt or one of being strapped in to the booster seat, but you will allow them to walk about amongst strangers, relative strangers, and their classmates, relative strangers, who have gotten exposed to God knows whom, from God knows what, without a mask. And that makes sense to you. That's 100% purity American. Yeah, okay, well, if that's what you consider to be Americana, you keep that part. You keep that part. I don't want that part. As Brother Rodney was saying so eloquently last week, freedom isn't free. It is a given right, or it is a benefit of a society that we live in, but it is free for you to use and do up to the point that it encroaches upon me and what I want to do and how I want to live. So no, freedom isn't free. There's a great responsibility still when dealing with others in the public spectrum. You have to be mindful of them just like they have to be mindful of you. That's what a society is. That's what community does. We have these folks right now whom are more concerned about themselves and not as so concerned about their community at large. You know, again, you're yelling, screaming, arguing, fighting the point about why this person was injured, why this person was not. There's some obvious differences in why the one person was, and there could be the sign or signal as to why the other person wasn't. But no matter what, when, again, we're going out here and we are benefiting from the larger society, we need to behave and reciprocate that lack of exposure to the community. Because, you know, I'm thinking of a situation where a CEO or whatever, right, is sitting on his or her ivory tower, and they're benefiting from the community and the nation as a whole because they're reaping those dividends. You know, people are spending money. So they don't have to be exposed to the nation at large because they are sitting in there. But it comes a point where if they don't enforce these guidelines or these rules, that they very well may have to be even more so exposed to the general public, because who's going to do the work? How's the work going to be done? Who's going to stand before maybe a congressional committee, maybe an ethics committee or whatever, and explain away why they did not do? And if they have to come out to do those things, then they are exposing themselves more so to the general public. So, you know, dog, this ain't going nowhere no time soon. So get familiar, mask up.
And we discussed that.
Keep the sanitizer.
We talked about that 2 years ago, Lee. We really did. We tried to explain, at least I
did.
How
are we talking
the
about
nature, the nature of the virus, any virus, all virus, right? The nature of all viruses is to mutate, to change. And if we got one that's being particularly dangerous in, within the community, its mutations are also going to be dangerous in the community.
Right.
It's not going to mutate down. It's not going to mutate itself out of existence. It tries
right.
to evolve and mutate itself into perpetuity. So
right.
we're going to be, and not to be, so is it so for the influenza virus, the AIDS virus, the Ebola virus, the smallpox. You understand? So if
mm-hmm.
we
mm-hmm.
not, this is not new viral behavior. This is what it do and what they have always done. So the precautions we take in now are not something we're going to be doing and getting rid of. This is how we need to be regarding each other pretty much into perpetuity, Lee. We done giving fives on the black hand side. You have to give them the elbow or the salute. In a minute, we're going to be done hugging. And if you don't know them, you done kissing them, they hand, they cheeks, and we done shaking hands. Unless you're going to squirt the sanitizer on there and then shake my hand, we can't shake hands. It's so much behavior that we're going to have to shift if we want to get back out there and live like you say, like folks are ready to live, like it's not real. Okay, fine, it's not real. But what is real is now you do this, you do this, you do this, and you do this. And now whether it's real or not, you don't have to worry about it or die or kill anybody. That's the new
us. You said something that really had me going at it the other day. You're right. We've been talking about this almost 2 years. So this is considered COVID-19. It's almost 2022, and we're still talking about the same disease. Why? Because folks are not taking it seriously. Folks are not taking the necessary precautions in order for this thing to come to a pass. That's why we're still talking about the same thing. That's why we're still going round and round and round again about masking and protecting ourselves as best we can with whatever equipment that is available on the market, the free market. But again, if folks don't take it seriously, if folks don't do their part, no matter what the minority of us do, if the majority are still at war, and it doesn't have to be like a super majority, because this is a living organism. This thing is trying to survive. So if you just give it a couple people, it will mutate and turn into something else and try to invade those quote-unquote healthy people or those quote-unquote vaccinated people. It doesn't really matter. At some point, we had to say, as a totality, not just in this country, but around the world, like, yo, this is serious. Let's lock it down. And the best way to lock it down, as you said, Sister Washington, you said it so eloquently, touch stuff as little as possible, wash your hands, wash your face, do the personal things that you can do in order to make this thing stay out of us, stay in the daylight, and hopefully the daylight will cleanse it. Not you know,
They're gonna make them start spraying us. Remember when they used to spray us with DDT?
Oh my God.
There used to be a time when they come and ride through the community. A truck would come and spray whole communities with chemicals.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, the little dude was talking about that just yesterday at my work, because we had the guy coming in and he was spraying down, like the mosquito man used to come around. Now, I don't know where you all live, and I don't know where you all are from, but there used to be a mosquito man that came around, you know, during the summer months. They would come around once a week at least, and they would literally just spray the air with the chemicals to keep the mosquitoes down. You know, this may have to happen with the coronavirus vaccine. This thing may have to be isolated to.
And these are some of the same people telling, don't tread on me. I'm not wearing no mask. You used to play hopscotch in a cloud of DDT smoke, but now you won't wear a mask.
Some people will not. Some people will not. You know, again, young lady says the other day, she's talking about it felt like a diaper was on people's faces or some crap like that. Yeah, people are coming up with anything and everything. They're coming up with anything and everything. Oh, you're killing us. You're suffocating the children. How are you suffocating the children? It's a freaking mask. It's not the Bane mask. They can breathe through the thing. It's not like, you know, they're getting very little oxygen or – it's 20 layers deep, and the filter on it is filtering out everything except for carbon or anything of that nature. Come on, man. Stop. So, again, but this is that's America. You know, Americans from our inception are a group of people who didn't want to comply. That's why we had the Boston Tea Party. We didn't want to comply. We did not want to conform to what the crown was telling us to do. So we've always been a rebellious community, you know.
And globally,
and that has trickled
that.
Over to.
That's right.
Right.
And that's
and
our
that
global. And this is an argument. One reason why we so. You know, our ideology is so closed like that is because the rest of the world already has what Americans are up to in their mind. Some want to participate, and some just is like, look at that foolishness, you know, from afar. And some is like, I got to see this show up close, okay? But however we do it, we suffer for it, Lee. Whatever that concept of American exceptionalism, we suffer. We suffer because we don't really have it. We're not at the top. We're not even in the top 10 educationally for global education. We're not in the top 10 for global health. We're not.
But most Americans don't believe that.
We can atomize your neighborhood. That's what we're good for. Crumble your whole, we'll make a whole pile of stones wherever you at. But even that, we don't do well because we kill innocent people.
Now, you had me pause. You paused me on that one. Like, even that we don't do well. No, I think we do that very well. Casualties of war are just that. They're casualties of war.
I mean, you're going to feel like
that's
that.
That's never going
to. You're going to. You have to hear that you have been trained to feel like loss of life sometimes just has to happen in order for you to do what you was calling your work.
Gotcha. And you know, I think we'll pick that up on the other side as well, because Rodney and I had that conversation just last night about have we been trained because of the line of work that I used to do, you know, as a veteran, have I been trained to be desensitized? You know, I was sharing with him that I'm working on a project, and it's in the brewing stages, right? And I had to take my hat off and put it in my hand and go to my baby mother. She didn't turn out to be my baby mother, but that's a different story from that time. And ask her to help me with something. I really want her to help me with this project. So in doing so, I shared with Ryden some background stories and information about what we got cooking and brewing and stuff. And I was like, dog, you know, I've been wondering and I've been meaning to ask you, do you feel like we have been desensitized? You know, I've been accused on a number of occasions of being able to have a very unique ability to compartmentalize my life. And I've said this on a number of occasions, you know, coming from where I came from, you know, again, young man, joining the United States military, 17 years old, and my second duty assignment was overseas. You know, I'm still wet behind the ears. I'm 18 years old, and I go to Europe in the early 90s, obviously the late 80s. There was no Google. There was no voice over internet protocol. There was no cell phone that you could just call back to the crib, and it wasn't super duper expensive. You had $10 a day or $10 a month, and you get an international plan. No. You know what I'm saying? Long-distance charges were in full effect. If you don't know about long-distance charges, first off, get off my show because you're too damn young to know what's going on in the world. You still got Similac on the breath. Secondly, I'm just joking with that part. Secondly, ask your parents, and the first thing they're going to do is go, "Ooh, good Lord, long-distance charges. Good Lord." Yeah, long-distance charges were expensive as hell. And so you learned very quickly that it wasn't the most appropriate thing for you to talk to whomever back at the crib all the time. It just it wasn't financially smart. It wasn't. It was expensive as hell. And you had to look at your pockets and recognize that that money in your pockets only went but so far. And though you loved whomever he, she, it, they, doesn't matter, were, was, again, whatever, the financial reality was you couldn't talk to them all the time. So you learn very quickly how to compartmentalize the fact that, yes, I love you. Yes, I want to be with you. Yes, I want to hear your voice. Yes, I want all these things. Yeah, that shit ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen because I can't afford it. And it's not like you want to send me no daggone money to make it happen. So, hey, let's deal with it for what it is. Let's deal with it when we can. And when we can't, it's okay. So that compartmentalization starts very, very early. You know what I'm saying? Not only that, just from the fact that you had to do your job, whatever your job may have been, you know, you had to put those questions, concerns, whatever, about home on the back burner while you were out there doing your job. Because if you allow them to creep in, they could possibly lead to death. They could put a pause in you. You wouldn't be as focused. You wouldn't be as sharp. You know, obviously, you know, your mind can only be in so many places at once. And if you're out here trying to defuse a bomb, your mind can't be on, you know, did I get that third question right on Little Susie's test? because, damn, I'm feeling a certain kind of way right now. No, you need to defuse that damn bomb before, you know, thousands of people die. So, yeah, absolutely. We very well might pick that up on the other side because we did have that conversation the other day. But I don't want to go too far. It's time for I guess, and she has been gracious enough to follow my instructions and come on at the time designated. Ladies and gentlemen, this week we have author Katrina Oliver Thomas. Now, Ms. Thomas and I met through a Facebook conversation. We were in on the same thread somewhere along the line. I found what she had to say to be interesting. So I did my Facebook thing, which I normally do. I look at the person to figure out who they are, what they're about, so on and so forth. And I thought, oh, she's an author. I was so jealous because, you know, I claim to be a writer, but I ain't wrote nothing yet. But you know, it's all right. It's coming. It's coming. Y'all just let me know it's coming. And when it comes, buy my damn book. But anyhow, so I'm like, ooh. Then the title of the book jumped out at me. The title of the book is 10 Things That I Learned While My Husband Had a Girlfriend. And I was like, huh, that sounds sensational. Now, you all know I love Maury. So if this wasn't some Maury stuff for you, I swear for Lord, I don't know what it was. So I'm like, oh, let me reach out to her. So I reached out to her immediately and said, hey, my name is blah, blah, blah. And she gave me some verb back. She said, hey, blah, blah, blah. I said, cool. I said, hey, I would love to get you on the show at some point. So she was like, oh, okay. You know how they do. So I was like, okay. So I finally read her book. And I promise you, I read the book from cover to cover, every last page. So essentially, I read 98.5% of her book. How is that even possible if I read cover to cover? Because the rest of it was biblical quotes, so I just gave that to Rodney because, you know, I'm the heathen and he's my biblical, you know, decipher. So I gave that stuff to him. So, yeah, you deal with that part. I'm going to read the rest of the stuff. So that's how that went down. But I finally finished it when I was in Ghana, and I reached out to her immediately and said, y'all, look, finished it, loved it, really want to get you on the show. And she was like, well, let me look at my calendar. And, you know, I was like, oh, Lord, here we go. That's going to be April next year. And she came back to, you know, with today. So we got her. We got her. And that's the most important thing. Good morning, Ms. Thomas. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Well. Thanks for getting up with us.
You are welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to come on the show and discuss the book and whatever else may come of it.
Please say hello to Sister Rashi. I don't want to be ignorant.
Good morning, Sister Rashi. How are you?
I have been. Do you know, ma'am, can I call you Miss Katrina? Miss Thomas?
You call me Katrina? Katrina is fine.
I listened to a podcast that you did about 5 months ago earlier this week. And I have you have been on my mind all week. And I don't know if it's a similarity in our story or me just curious about, you know, your process, your method, but I am so excited today. I'm going to have to do my best not to talk over my co-host.
Well, thank you. That's interesting. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
That is a task because she will talk over a brother in a heartbeat. So, look, let's get into it. You married the love of your life, so you thought. You all had a couple children?
Three. Mm-hmm. At the time of the we have three now. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, a few children. And then everything went in the wind. Girl, what happened? What happened?
Of course, hindsight is 20/20. And in retrospect, we shouldn't have been married anyway. But it was kind of like you in it now. and you know some things. So because all things are possible, you're going to, you know, try to make it work. Do your best. Be the best wife you can be. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, because he was essentially at some point a decent person. And so I did, you know, and you know, we didn't have kids right off. We were married for almost 6 years before we had our first one. And then 4 years later, we had another one. And then 4 years later, we had another one. And even in the midst of all of that, you know, things are still falling apart, crumbling, no compatibility, no compromise from the other side to gain that compatibility. And so it was like, okay, at what point do – because we both grown. He was he's 7 years older than me. And it's like we're both adults. We know it's not working. At what point do we say out of our mouths, this ain't working, we're either going to change
hold on.
Or we're going to walk away?
Slow up now, slow up. You said he's 7 years older than you.
Correct.
Let's see, I couldn't do that to you. I like older women. I'm a cub. I like to be cougar bait.
I won't be doing it again. You know, since I'm out here dating now, 7 years, I'm not going there again. I'm staying around the four to five years over me and maybe 2 years younger than me. But, I mean, he just wasn't adult enough to say, I don't want to be married to you anymore. I mean, he said it, but just in terms of leaving and walking away, he just wouldn't do it because, again, not trying to be funny, you've read the book, you've read chapter 5, you know, I owned my stuff. But the truth of the matter is, if he would have left me, because people are saying it, you know, since the divorce, people would have been like, why you leave Trina? What's she do? But every time we see her and the kids, blah, 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 blah. Why, you left Trina? It really, I promise you it would have been like that. Whereas when I announced I was leaving, his own family was like, you know what, we don't blame you. We know you tried as long as you did. That's what I got. You know, oh, my gosh, you know what? Wow. I understand. So I was at peace with the decision I made because I'm like, at some point, my peace of mind and sanity has to matter to me. And so that's when I made the decision after almost 25 years to just be done.
Lee, do you mind?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to make sure because we're going to be talking here for a minute, and I don't want you to go to sleep. Okay.
Lord have mercy.
All right. Ms. Katrina, the first thing I wanted to ask you is this. How his behavior didn't change. The person you married was the person you divorced. Would you agree?
Yes, but to be honest, and I don't know if I didn't know him. We met, in September of 1991, and we were married in December of 1991. Now, I'm not saying that it can't happen, because I know people who had short-term dating lives, and they've been married forever. But for us, like I said, it just really boiled down to we should not have been married to begin with. I didn't really know about marriage. Again, 19, I shouldn't have been nobody's wife. I had no business being nobody's wife at 19.
That's right. Not.
And so,
now, would you say that the person you divorced is the person he is now?
I would. And that is only because of conversations that I have had or that my children have with me about how his behavior and because of what I have seen, the interactions I've seen with him and his girlfriends since we've been divorced. That has led me to believe that he is still the same person.
So most of the good change, most of the change, good or bad, happened with you and your children. That other person was, is, and remains absolute in their character and they are not repenting or trying to atone for their behavior. Would you say?
that would be correct.
So, now, this is where I really wanted to be. Can you talk to me and us women about what that looks like? What does that resolved change look like? Because if that person's not, the problem is the issue is an unyielding. It doesn't change. It doesn't, you know, maybe a little flux, but still the same situation. What did you say to you? Because you looked in the mirror one day. Am I right, Miss Katrina?
This is correct.
You looked right in there. You looked in your own eyes about, and you looked about him. You wasn't thinking about groceries or nothing. You said what?
I said to myself, this is not who you are at your core. This is not the person that you were raised to be to allow yourself to be treated this way. And you know this. So you're going to have to find that Katrina, resurrect her, and move on with your life. You are smart. You are intelligent. You have good sense. You will survive. That Gloria Gaynor song, I will survive. And that's what I told myself, I will survive. He is not the end-all, be-all. This marriage is not the end-all, be-all. It is not your final place. You have got to be the woman that you know that you are and do what you know is best for you and your kids and do the right thing. And I told him, is it going to be hard? Probably so. But you can make it. I literally had to encourage myself. And then it fell back to, what is it you can do to cause you not to find yourself in this situation again? What is it you can do to further build your own inner strength and display the inner beauty that you know you have? These are real conversations I had with myself all the time. It just wasn't over the course of right when I'm, it was over the course of time as opposed to right when I made the decision to leave. These conversations gave me the strength to say, I am done. I am done. I am done. I'm not about keeping up airs and appearances. I'm not one that's going to be in a marriage just to say I'm married. I did that for almost 25 years, and I was like, enough is enough.
So you say, I'm going to find the Katrina. I'm finding the Katrina I know I am. Where'd you look for her at? Was she in the gym? Was she at work? Was she at, where was the Katrina you were looking to find?
That Katrina I was looking to find was in the form of helping other people, because I'm a helper. That's just me by nature. I'm a helper. I'm an empath. So my thing was to, out of my own mistakes and mess ups and experiences, help other people to live their best lives. So whenever, and I had, you know, people when I was married, of course, on the outside looking in, thinking, oh, my God, y'all are great and wonderful, blah, 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 you're great and wonderful. And I used to tell people all the time, do not be moved by what you see. Don't be moved by what you see. Please don't be, especially when it comes to us, don't be moved by what you see. And, of course, some people just looking for dirt. So you have to be mindful of how much you share with certain people. Plus, I wasn't one to air our dirty laundry anyway, but I was not the one just making people think things were great and wonderful. Like I said, you just have to find a gray area, so to speak, when sharing with some people, because some people just want to know, oh yeah, they ain't all that like people say they are, and it's mess, as opposed to learning from my mess to help your marriage or your relationship be better. So any advice that I would give would come out of a place of the mistakes that I made, as opposed to it coming across as we got the blueprint for how to have a great marriage.
You know, I think
that's where
that
I found me.
Women. One thing that confuses women, Ms. Katrina, is when they're doing, when they're pretending to be in a good marriage and when they're actively doing what it takes to create a good marriage. Because the behavior is real similar, you know, but there's this essence of something that's missing. Can you talk to us about that? Like, because you said the house was popping, right? The kids are educated. From outside, you were, well, who, Claire? Huxtable? But even with all that, there was something missing. What was it?
What was missing was the compatibility and the communication. I'm sorry, the open, honest, clear communication. We communicated, but it was not open communication. It wasn't clear communication, and it wasn't honest communication. And don't get me wrong, there were, we had a, or at least I did, I had a, there was a handful of people who knew us, and they knew, and they attempted to speak into our lives in terms of some things that they saw, you know, and, you know, you just have people that you can go to. I had my people, I had my tribe, and they knew the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the indifferent. The thing about it was, and this was something I used to say, you know, with the relationship, both people got to be rowing. It can't just be one person willing to row and toe the line. I was willing to do, we tried counseling, couples counseling. I went to individual counseling. If you know anything about church, I went through deliverance, all of that. Because like I said in the book, my prayer was never, God, fix him, fix him. It was always, what can I do to be the wife that he needs me to be? Thing I tried at every attempt, it was like, yeah, that's good, but if you had have done this, blah, 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 and it was, I never would have been enough. And it wasn't until after I was divorced that I learned the true meaning of what a narcissist is. And when I was reading all the characteristics, I was like, oh my God, this is him. This is, so essentially nothing I would have done would have ever been enough for him because, I mean, at the end of the day, I truly was not the person that he wanted.
So,
and
you,
I had to accept that.
You said a couple of times, you said compatibility. How were you all not compatible? Outside of the communication piece, because we'll delve into that in a minute.
We were not compatible in how we handled finances, and all of these are like the targeted areas of marriages and relationships. We were not compatible in our mindset in terms of handling finances. We were not compatible sexually. We were not compatibility in terms of when it comes to our recreation and leisure activities. We were not compatible in our methods of parenting.
Okay,
and
so
these really
slow down for a second. Katrina, did he R. Kelly you? You, girl, you can tell me. Did
oh,
he R. Kelly
oh, child, no, no, far from it.
No,
the opposite
I'm,
of
I'm
it.
Say, oh, you whipped him? You whipped him?
Huh?
You whipped him? If you can hide, you can hear. Did you whip him?
No.
Okay.
Were not.
Okay. No. Hold on. Hold on 1 second, Rashi. I would like 2 lumps with my tea because we're getting to it right about now. Okay, so here we go. You done got yourself this grown man because, you know, you still a little girl. You 19 years old. That's a grown man right there.
Right.
You know, that what's that? That's 26, 7 year difference.
Right.
That's 26, almost 27. You
right.
About to turn 20.
Right.
So you hooked yourself a grown man. Like, girl, I got myself a grown. He's full grown. Okay. So now you said you waited, what, 5, 6 years before you had your first child together?
6 kids. I was 25. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 6 years before you had your first child together. But you weren't sexually compatible.
Correct.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So the second kid came 4 years later, and you still weren't sexually compatible. Yeah, we'll get to that. And the third one came 4 years after that. Yeah, something going on right now.
I'm sure you have had sex that has not been good sex, have you not?
Oh, Lord. Oh, girl, look,
okay.
Let me tell you, it's horrible. I mean, just straight horrible. And women can give horrible sex, ladies. Please understand and believe it. You all can give horrible sex. Good Lord have mercy. It's just, ain't nothing worse. Anyhow, so here it is. You got this grown man. Y'all married. Y'all stay married for 25 years, which, look, in today's society is a miracle. Because, you know, folks do everything like instant popcorn, instant grits around here nowadays. 90 seconds, they done.
Right.
But I applaud you for that. I applaud you, too, for trying to understand that it may not have been him. It could have been you. But then you recognize that, no, in this case, well, it wasn't me. It actually was him. So that's a good look on your part as well. But I want to get into now, because I don't want to keep you too long, but I want to keep you long enough. the things that you learned when he got a girlfriend. So it's 10 of them. Now, I want to go through that, if you don't mind. So let's run through the chapters, if you don't mind, for those who haven't read the book as of yet. And the book is available on Amazon, so y'all anthropos, Negroes, go out here and buy this lady's book to support the sister like you want her to support you. Chapter 1, what did you learn? Well, what's the first
one? That vengeance is not mine. It was not for me to get revenge. And the way that I had planned was, you know, to humiliate him. Because I was humiliated. The choice of woman. I mean, not even, it was more or less just embarrassing him. Because I was embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because she was exactly the type of woman you said you would never look at, never entertain, even talked about. You know what I'm saying? And then that's what you go out and you cheat with. And the community where they were, you know, he had a good name in that community. But no one knew because he worked in a separate community from where we lived. They didn't know him the way that the people where we live knew him. So I kind of wanted to put him on blast. You know what I'm saying? He ain't all y'all think. But that was not for me to do. And I'm glad I didn't because I do understand the process of sowing and reaping. And I wasn't trying to have them bad seeds out there coming back to me.
But you thought it, though.
You know, things,
But you thought it, though. I like your gangster.
Oh, yes, I did. I did. I surely did.
I like your gangster.
I most certainly did. Yeah, I had the plan already. I'm going to take a billboard out and everything. And it was like, why? Why are you going to do that? Because, and I'm going to tell you something about me, and I have to keep telling myself this even now with trying to date. You can't keep expecting you from other people. And I don't know, you know, and that's
girl,
just what it is,
that.
But I...
You ain't never lied with that. I tell people all the time, yo, you got to leave space for other people. You got to leave space for them to be them. You want space for them to accept you as you. You have to create space for them to be them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, everything isn't personal. If we don't, if we've known one another for 2 months, and I say something or I do something, and it pisses you off, and you just walking around here pissed off, I have no idea why you pissed off. I don't know you like that. I don't know something that I consider to be nothing and or very small is a hot button topic for you. Pull me up, be like, yo, I didn't like that. Hey, I didn't like what you said. I didn't like what you did. Blah 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 blah. Give me the information. Now it's up to me to adjust my behavior once I have the information. But if you haven't given me anything, I have no idea what to or what not to do. So I could still be pushing the same damn button and you about to go off like a nuclear weapon and I have no clue because you haven't said nary word. Well, you should have known. How am I supposed to know?
And that's why I am so big. That was my takeaway from my failed marriage was the open, honest, and clear communication because I failed to do that on my part simply because I was raised, you know, if you can't say nothing nice, don't say anything at all. And truth be told, I really had nothing nice to say about my ex-husband because he was just not a nice person, father, husband. And I'm like, I'm not about to gas him up because he's not all that. So I didn't say anything. The communication was enough to keep the household running and making sure the kids were okay. That was not the way to handle that. I know that now. So if anything, I tend to over-communicate at this point, and so I'm trying to find a balance in that. But because what I'm not going to do is go down this same road twice. And it's so funny with, you know, communication and dating. I was reading something the other day. It was like men don't have trust issues. They'll put their penis in a mouth full of teeth. And I'm like, you know what? That's good. Because how can you put your penis in my mouth with my teeth? But you can't communicate you can trust me enough that I ain't going to bite you, but you can't communicate your feelings to me? We ain't doing that no more. We too old for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they are afraid.
There's so much fear.
There's fear. Openness, they're not afraid of you harming them. That's not it.
Exactly.
The fear is of you knowing them.
That is it.
Actually knowing exactly who they are in every situation, removing all randomness and spontaneity.
Yes.
And the only way they're going to catch you popping and slipping now is to incorporate another individual, because you have tallied all, you didn't add it up, Kevin, and it came up to, okay, this is a more con than pro. When someone
right.
knows in your heart that they have come lacking and that they have no intention of doing whatever you think it, even uh-huh. after all that talking, talkie, they are not
mm-hmm.
about to implement any of the restorative justice measures
uh-huh.
that it's
uh-huh.
going to take to sow the seed again, then, yeah, they have to start bringing in new people to run game on.
Right.
And I'm yeah. that's what I call it. And see, Brother Lee has made fun of me for being I don't really do that. You say you dating, I don't do that no more. Don't, in fact, I take offense.
I'm trying.
Do not look at me. In fact, I'm not next, and I'm so glad I'm kind of old. I kind of look like Harriet Tubman now, so I don't have to fight them off like I had to in the back in the day. But don't look at me. If you want to do something with me, you want to would you want to write or read something? Was there a solution, or you want a problem solving that could maybe net in some funds? But if not, don't even know. So
right.
for you to still be dating, to me, is to your Christianity, the faith and hope of tomorrow aspect of your Christianity. And because I've been out there, I went out there and looked. And they believe in vampires. They live not with their mama, but with they live with their grandma. Some of them live with their
uh-huh.
children. They
uh-huh.
live in their children's basements. Some of them are real transient. They waiting on you to let them in.
Uh-huh.
Some of them are so religious. You like, are you in a homosexual relationship with Jesus? It's
uh-huh.
too much.
It is. And I've not been successful at it because, again, taking the lessons that I have learned, it's like men, they want a woman to communicate until they get a woman that communicates. And like you said, it forces them to open up to you, but it also forces them to have to look inside themselves. And some of them, the ones I have come across, aren't ready to do that. And that's fine, but I'm not obligated to wait around on you to figure it out. And I just keep it moving.
I got you.
Now, when people hear that, I know you've been called it at least once. Bitter bitch, at least once?
That has come in some of the lives on Facebook and the podcasts I've done. You know, that came across, you know, they didn't reference me, but if we on a live where I'm talking, you know, I just took it to me. But I'm not. What, trust me, if anybody has a reason to be bitter towards men, it is me. I didn't even put everything in this book that went down those 25 years. But I am a person, I take everyone at face value. You 100% with me until you give me a reason not to be, until you prove me wrong. And that's just me. That could be it's a blessing and a curse because I have not been taken advantage of since I've been, you know, divorced. But people, they'll kind of try you. And I'm like, but I take everybody at face value. We start out at 100. Then that's man or woman, friendship, relationship, whatever, until you give me a reason not to trust you. I just want to see the good in people because I know that there is good in people just like there's bad, there's evil. But I just choose to look and see the good. Does that mean I miss red flags and don't notice red flags? No, we ain't going to the carnival of red flags waving. That's not what we're doing. I choose to focus on the green flags. Now, if I'm be talking for a while or I notice no green flags come up, then again, I bounce. I'm out. I'm too old. I turned 49 last week. I'm too old for games, representatives.
Congratulations. So, happy belated birthday.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it's just, it to me, it literally is as simple as you meet somebody, y'all click, you talk, you get to know each other, you have discussions about your triggers, your past experiences, if you feel like that's a person you want to explore those things with. Now, if you out here on some other stuff just looking to play, have at it. But if you this is somebody you are seriously thinking about, I see nothing wrong with having those discussions up front. Saving everybody time, as like you said, opposed 2 months down the line, you say something that triggers them, they walking around looking crazy, not saying anything. We have more time behind us than we do in front of us when you get to this second quarter of life, this third quarter of life.
Now I want to say something, and I'm glad that and I'm going to invite the family on. So if you're listening, you want to chime in, hit the number one, I'll bring you on. Again, if you're listening, hit the number one, I'll bring you on. And you want to chime in. 818-691-7348. Again, 818-691-7348. I've had an issue as of late. No, it's not ED. I've had an issue in which sex is the easy part. You know, I'm not so concerned about that right now. I can do that part. That's going to come. Can we do the other stuff? And I've transitioned my mindset from the sexual stuff to the other stuff, and that's not going over so well. It's just not. I think I don't know what to think, to be honest with you. I don't know if I keep meeting people who are hitting the second peak of their sexual prime, or those whom have been uncommitted for so long that, you know, now it's like, okay, got something good, let's go. Like, nah, dog, I'm good on that. Like, yeah, but no, I'm not that pressed. And that is something that has been on my mind, and I wanted to bring up because it's been something that folks have been not responding to very well. However, let's get back and skip. I just wanted to throw that nugget out there. Maybe that'll come. We can circle back to that. One
is
of the
there?
Things
I mean, but that's
the
way to answer. Is there a sexual element of your book of what your ex-husband's girlfriend taught you? Did she have something sexual that she was doing, or some avant-garde sexual nuance about her that taught you how? You know, did you learn a lesson about that from her?
No, because she saw him in the car. This is what he told our daughter. She saw him in the car one day after school and was like, oh, what's wrong, blah, 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 blah. So it was that emotional appeal. Because, you know, affairs don't start in the bedroom. They start in conversation. And that conversation is what led to that. Because, I mean, I was not talking to him on that. I would try. But when you just have to know the dynamics of what we had. And it just felt like I was going through the rigmarole, as the old folk used to say, just going through the motions of how was your day, how was work. But then when your days at work got longer and longer and longer into the night, when I'm in the bed asleep when you get home, then those how was your days conversations went away because you get home when we all in the bed. So that it was that. It wasn't, again, like I said in the no sex for me, I would rather have no sex than bad sex. Anything initiated in the bedroom, new to try, it was me. He was a prude. So it wasn't the sex. Because trust me, when we did have it, it was what it was on my end. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, Lord.
And
Here she go. Lord have mercy. You a Virgo or Libra?
So
a Libra, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm a Virgo.
Which one? Oh, well, yeah, well, never mind.
September 22nd.
Keep talking that talk, Team Virgo. You go, girl, because I know how we
Ms.
do
Keisha.
It.
I'm listening.
No,
please.
But I mean, I'm just saying, because to me,
if I was
the problem on my end, since I have been divorced, I don't think I would have just learned how to have sex in the last 5 years. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I heard you say that.
Lord have mercy.
Oh, you guys have made me lose my train of thought with that craziness. Ms. Keisha.
You need a verbal in your life.
That's
all I'm saying.
I hear your lesson one being that you can't have vengeance. One of the things I wanted to talk about is that standard. in the podcast, and I hate to bring up old shit, but that's how women do. You talked about how your household was, I mean, y'all hair was bright. I mean, everything that all the standards that he set for your family were met by you. And that is some of the root of your frustration and maybe in the past anger, because the woman that he went forward to had not met very few of those standards, you know, educationally or aesthetically or, you know, interpersonally. And so what I wanted to say is, could one of those lessons she taught you be that they use a sliding scale? You know, they don't necessarily use the same scale they had for you for anyone else. So you can't, you can't compare, because they almost hit a reset button for their standards list when they decide to venture out of a pre-established relationship.
Right. I agree. I can agree with that. And that's why I had to learn to, after the initial hurt, to not take it personally. Because I fit and checked everything. I fit into the box that he created, checked all the boxes. So it was like, what else is there? Well, apparently there's this over here. So, okay.
Let me tell y'all something.
You know, it is.
Let me tell y'all something. Y'all better listen to Biggie when Biggie talk. When Biggie say, "When if the head right, leave me the head," I'm just saying. But see, all this stuff about the aesthetics, all that shit go out the window. If you find somebody whom caters to your ego, right? The male ego is very fragile. Now,
uh-huh.
I'm not defending the brother. I'm not defending the brother at all. But if at some point he was turned off, and or
right.
at some point he found that or felt like his ego wasn't being catered to, then
right.
he could switch and look at another avenue. And then if she comes through and caters to that ego, then boom. Now, chapter five. You admitted to your stuff, right? So your stuff in
uh-huh.
this case, again, for those who didn't read the book, was you had a conversation with a guy outside of your husband.
Right.
It was nothing more
uh-huh.
than a conversation. He believed it was something much, much deeper, right? Now, this
uh-huh.
this is male ego. This is male our emotional ineptitude, because our misunderstanding of emotions, it's a whole lot of stuff balled into one.
Uh-huh.
From the male's perspective, be it it was a conversation, not how far it went, doesn't matter. If he's like at that point where he's like, you know what, we've been in this thing like 7 years now. Yeah, we official. Because, you know, we stupid. So it might have taken 7 years. It might take us 7 years to be like, yeah, this won't really last. Okay, let me start to open up. And now he comes home and he wants to open up. On that day that he comes home and he really wants to open up, he walks in and he finds this information. He's like, oh, shit. See, she trying to play me. And now he shuts down. Now, again, we stupid. Admittedly so. So it may very well have taken him 7 years, 3 years, whatever, to really be like, okay, I'm extremely comfortable. She's been there. She's with me. I'm with her. We're really going to do this. We're really going to rock it out. Let me just go ahead and let the walls go down and really pour it out. And he could have walked in and that's what could have happened. Not saying it did happen, but I'm saying that's what could have happened. And if that did happen, then he would seek another source to stroke his ego, to rebuild his confidence in him being that manly man, and be like, oh, I'm good, I'm over it. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm now building the out strategy just in case you try to leave me. Like, you ain't leaving me out in the cold. I'm be good too. Because that's just how
mm-hmm.
a lot of cats think. You know what I mean? Again, good, bad, and different. That's just how we think. So
no,
that.
I mean, that was at a particular time, chapter five. But I agree, it definitely was an ego thing. Pride, sex, and money are three areas where men, if they don't feel like they're on top of their game in those three areas, it's life altering for them. And
absolutely,
that was, again, that was, he was not the person that he thought he was. And I just couldn't build up a lie. I just could not find it in myself to do it. So, but again, I never used my words to tear him down, but by the same token, I didn't use my words to build him up as well as I should have either. But there again, and just thinking about everything over those years, nothing I would have done would have been enough. I, to this day, still have never received, you know, a genuine apology, which I'm okay because I know him. I knew I was never going to get that, and that was fine. Honestly, the book was supposed to be written by the both of us at the time this particular infidelity happened, so that we could, you know, be this beacon of light to other couples. You too can come through infidelity and have the best marriage ever. He went down with that because he was like, no, we're not doing it. And he was not ready to open up and let his faults be known. Well, I'm all about transparency. Why not let our mistakes be, help somebody else? You know, I thought after the infidelity, I really thought we could, because I was willing to forgive and move past it. So why can't we both do it and be great together?
His mistake was not incidental. The mistake was not, the infidelity was a symptom of the overall illness of narcissism. You see, when you run in game, when you run in game on a young girl's mind, and at 19, and you were enamored with the idea, because he had talked. I get it now. Is he a man gifted with his words? Because he had talked to you in such a way. He had spoke to you a future that you were able to buy into hook, line, and sinker. You bore children into it. And so when you started seeing the discrepancy between what the words that came out of his mouth and what it took in order for other people to see even a remnant of that, it removed the veil. It removed his ability to run game on you, because he would have had to show you how he was going to do all these things he told you need to stand by, to the back and to the left for. So what you were asking him to do was not talk about his cheating. That's not what you were asking him to do. You were asking him to tell other men out there about how his veil of game fell within the course of his marriage. How his mind game he ran on you disintegrated, and what you were doing in the process to grow past it. It had nothing to do with some other person he drug in after the game was up.
Right. That's good. That's good.
Mm.
That is good.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for that.
What do you think the most impactful lesson was? Outside of Vengeance Wasn't Yours, because, you know, you didn't hurt nobody.
The most impactful lesson, that's a good one.
This is why we don't draft questions.
I would say the most impactful lesson was not to beat yourself up. I had to learn the same grace that I extended to other people by giving them the benefit of the doubt and seeing the good. I had to extend that grace to myself and stop with the, how could you have let this happen? How could you have let this go on for so long? That was it for me, is for me to not beat myself up, because I was doing a wonderful job of it. You ought to be ashamed. You know you weren't raised like this. Your grandmama would blah, 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 blah. You know, and the illness in you and the altar in
Big
you
Mama
and da, 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 da. Huh? I did. I had to because I know.
Big
you know what I'm saying? And but that's what it was. It was to not beat myself up. And, I mean, I was doing it. And it's like the same grace you give to other people, you've got to give to yourself. You didn't know. But when you learned better, you did better. And that's what I had to tell myself.
How the kids do all this?
They're again, okay, trying to make a long story short. My daughter was 13, 14 at the time of the divorce. And about 6 months into it, because we shared custody every other week, and I wouldn't go anywhere on the weeks that they were with me because, oh, that's our time, and we're a family while they're here, and blah, 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 blah. But she was like, at 13, 14, she's like, Mama, you free now, live your life. And I'm like, no, I can't leave y'all on the weekends or go out on a night that I'm with y'all. She's like, Mama, you are free now, live your life. For her to say, because I never talked about their dad to them, and I don't now. But for her to recognize that. And then last year, her senior year of high school, they had this little group that met, and apparently that particular day they had talked about toxic relationships and toxicity, because she said to me, she was like, Mama, your marriage to daddy was toxic. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Where did that come from? Oh, today in whatever the little group was, we were talking about toxic relationships. And she knew enough about what went down in our marriage, how her daddy treated me, talked to me, to recognize the toxic traits when they were presented in this particular group that they were in. Mm. My son, the youngest, he was about 10 or 11 when we got divorced. No, he's 14 now. So he was about 9, I think. Every few, because what we told them was, we're just two good people, not good for each other. Because, again, I'm not going to badmouth him, not going to say anything to him. So every few months, he would be like, Mama, why'd you really leave Dad? Why'd y'all really get divorced? Oh, we were just two good people, not good for each other. He would buy that for maybe about 6 more months, maybe a year later. Mama, are you really going to tell me what happened between you and Dad? And I would give him the same thing. And he just kept, because my kids have good sense. And he would just keep asking. Oh, so finally, maybe about a year and a half ago, I felt released to give him a little bit more information because I'm like, the book is out there. They can read it for themselves. And he knew the title of the book. And so I kind of, you know, told him, and he was like, wow, I knew Dad was trash. There again, through nothing that I have, they have been seeing things, like I said, because he's had girlfriends since we've been divorced. They've seen his interaction with other women. They've seen how he's interacted with them. And when they will come to me and say things and vent about, I'm like, look, I have no control over what goes on over there. Y'all need to talk to your daddy. But at the end of the day, you say what's on your mind, but you be respectful because he's still your dad. But we can't talk to him like we talk to you. I said, I understand that, but I can't get into anything that goes on over there. Unless, and I've only had to make this exception twice, is when I felt their bothering their emotional and mental well-being. Those have been the only times I've had to come to him and be like, look, blah, 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 blah. Anything other than that, it's just daddy-kid issues that they're going to have to work out. Mm-hmm. But they are, I was talking to my daughter last week, and I was, you know, checking, seeing how everything was going. She's like, oh, me and Miles, we're balancing out. Because, like I said, where they used to be able to come over to my house for a week, they don't have that reprieve anymore. And I use the word reprieve because based on conversations that I have had with them, coming to my house was like, oh, my God, we can breathe now and just be. It was really like getting away from him. So, yeah. Now, my oldest son, his namesake, he is his daddy's child. He doesn't hate me or anything like that. But, you know, he's the firstborn. He's his dad's namesake. So I think he feels a sort of allegiance to his dad. I don't have a problem with that because there again, just like the two youngest saw their dad for who he was, he at some point he may or may not see. But that's my child, and I love him to pieces. And like I said, he still calls, checks on me. He wants me to meet him, his girlfriend, in Atlanta next week. So we're good. They're good. And it's just been a process for everybody. And, again, being one to communicate, I'm always checking in with them, Do you need counseling? You feel like you need to go to therapy? Well, I might just make you an appointment anyway, so just know that, because I need y'all to be okay. I said, I'm not trying to raise kids who got to recover from their childhood, and I need y'all to understand that.
That's right. Miss Katrina, I'm Patty.
Yes.
What happened to the girlfriend? Where's she at?
Child, listen, they didn't even make it. It did take him a while to cut it off, because the killing part about that is she was engaged to somebody at the time. She was messing around with him.
Man. Right. That's some high-end Maury Lee. That's some high-end.
She was engaged.
I mean,
and so neither one of them respected either relationship. But, yeah, they didn't make it, and there was actually another one after that. As a matter of fact, when I told him I wanted a divorce, found out about 6 months after that that he had already started seeing somebody a couple of months before I told him I was leaving. So it's just in his – it was in his nature.
Mm.
Yep.
Mm. Well, I want to thank you. You are so open. You are so honest. You have put clearly your God and yourself and your family in that order, in the top shelves of your reality. And I appreciate you, Black woman, for being willing, because you know the mantra is, get you some business and get out of mind, you know. But as you said, you know, with your ex-husband, it's not until we are honest and open about the conditions we find ourselves in that the person can learn. I can't learn until you tell the truth. The truth is the only teacher that matters, really.
Exactly.
And so until you really and open and honest about it, nobody can learn, not even you. Not even you can learn until you tell the truth about it. So I want to thank you so much, Miss Katrina. Oh, man, this has been a fantastic learning day. And if anybody out there has not heard, she said, make sure you look at yourself and do a self-assessment. She did not try to start with her husband. She started with herself. She started by finding what it was that was important in her life that matters, which was her God and her family, her education. She's already a super educated woman. So after a while, you just have to stop living somebody else's idea of your life.
You better
decide, this is my life. This here mine.
Amen.
And even
yes, ma'am.
Your children have to get in line behind that. They have to, or else you fail every time. I want to thank you, Miss Katrina. I have learned more today than a whole semester of some education I had back in the day. And I'm sorry if we took too much of your time, but like I told you in the beginning, there was so much to learn here today.
Well, I want to thank you, Sister Rashi, because when you broke that down about it wasn't about coming together to discuss the infidelity, but him, that I had never looked at it from that perspective, and that makes so much more sense to me now. So I thank you for that lesson for me today.
Honey, I was listening to you. I said, that's not what that was. This was this. I got to tell her that.
And I appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate you and your time for coming on. Again, please tell the folks to. I was fighting you tooth and nail to get some PR information from you. Tell the folks how they can get your book and what's going on with you. You going on tour? You have any signings? What's happening?
You know what? And this wasn't even in my mind when I wrote this book. It was just about helping other people. So all the lives and the podcasts and the interviews and the selling of the book, it was like if my mama and her little friends would have just bought it, I would have been okay. It's really turned out to be bigger than what I thought. So the book is 10 Things I Learned When My Husband Had a Girlfriend by me, Katrina Oliver Thomas. It's available on Kindle, paperback, and ebook. Or you can email me at klthomas7290@gmail.com. That's klthomas7290@gmail.com, and I will send you an autographed copy for $10. I can also be found on Facebook, Katrina Oliver Thomas. Instagram, I think, is Katrina_Thomas72, because, like I said, the PR and the marketing were the least of my – I was not even thinking about this. And so it's like, oh, you need an author page and – I just wasn't, but I see now I just need to. I'm thinking about doing a podcast. It's Divorced, Single, and Saved, just highlighting everything from co-parenting to rebuilding yourself financially after divorce to patiently waiting after divorce to divorce shenanigans, you know, in the dating world, just kind of exploring where I've been and what's been going on these last 5 years. So stay tuned for that. That is in the works.
Okay. Well, again, sister, we thank you. We appreciate you so much. Thanks for being our feature this week. If you ever need us, we're just a phone call or a quick drop of a note away. And we hope you enjoyed us as much as we have enjoyed you.
I have, and thank you again for allowing me to be your guest on the show. I appreciate y'all.
Not a problem, sis. You have a great one, okay?
All right, y'all too.
All right, peace.
Bye.
So, Brian,
yeah.
See, every now and again, I could do some good stuff. You know what I'm saying? So, vengeance is not hers. I like that part, to be honest with you. She wanted to hurt the boy bad. She did. She wanted to hurt the boy bad. She wanted to hurt the boy.
All men like vengeance is not yours.
Hmm?
I bet you all y'all like that particular scripture. Vengeance is not mine. I bet you it's a whole bunch of men lined up to get that tattooed somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yo, look, you know, whatever, man. Look, when you're dealing with two folks trying to put them together, again, you have to recognize that there's two imperfect beings that are trying to become one. That's some work. That's some give. That's some take. That's some understanding. That's some checking the ego at the door. That's work. It's work. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not, you know, oh, we're going to breathe in. We're going to knock the thing out. We're going to keep it. No, dog. Look, it's understanding. It's trust. It's not envy. It's not jealousy. It's a damn sure not jealousy. It could be a little envy, but not jealousy. There's a difference. You know, you could be envious of something. Like I indicated at the beginning, I'm envious of her. She's written her book. I'm still trying to get mine out. But I'm not jealous of her. You know what I'm saying? I'm definitely supportive. I'm definitely on her team. So that's what's up with that respect and in that regard. But, you know, it's a constant work in progress. You know, my mom says to me, and this is one of my older brothers, his mother. She says to me, she says, I just realized not so long ago that my husband is my best friend. And at that point, they had been married over 20 years. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, you're out here, you're dating, and you meet folks, and folks are saying off the rip, oh, I want to meet my best friend, and like, yo, that crap takes time. It takes time to build up that level of trust and respect and admiration for one another and appreciation for one another to, you know, you start throwing away these, throwing around these best friend monikers. That's not overnight. What's he not with a dude? Oh, yeah, you're my best friend. What? No. Hell no. That ain't going to happen. Not most of us. It's just not going to happen. And it's nothing against you. It's just not how we're built. You know what I'm saying? I gotta put some weight on that to see if you can withstand some of this shit that I got with me. You know, to make sure that we're good. And that doesn't happen in 2 months or 3 months or 6 months. Hell, it might not happen in 6 years. You know, man, look, I got all kinds of friends. I got a number of best friends. Some of them know a hell of a lot more than others do. That's just how we're made. You know? So, yeah. It's cool. it's cool. But yeah, I wanted to have this conversation because I thought it was worth having. You know, it's cuffing season. The weather's changing. We're going from summer to fall. You know what I mean? So folks are out here looking to boo up. And before you boo up, let's give you some advice. You know, let's make sure you're taken care of. We can help you along that journey as best we can and as much as we can. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody is not taking the Rashi perspective. Everyone's not swaying off the other sex or the same sex or whatever forever. They're not swearing off that. So if we have an opportunity to provide you some information, hopefully some usable information, why not? Right, Rashi?
We provided so much today. You could study a week just on what she had went to school to write a book. He pissed her off. She went to school, learned how to got a degree, wrote a book, and about to top the charts probably somewhere. This is what I'm talking about when you decide to re-channel your energy. So I have never stopped learning on this show, Lee. If I don't learn something from what we do, I try to come back and say and apologize for the last show. You understand? Because there's so much to be understood, you know. One day I would like for us to do a classroom session, get a couple of people on the phone line, and we can do a, you know, critical race theory lesson, show you what it looks like, show you how it is, if you want to talk learning. I would like for us to do a class on how to resolve little petty legal stuff on your own, like how to type your own divorce, how to make your, you know, how to find a notary to get something, get an affidavit, you know, notarized. I would like us to talk about, you know, things we can do in the kitchen, medicinal work in the kitchen, things you absolutely should always have in your kitchen if you're trying to honestly take care of yourself. You know, there's so much we still have to go, you know, all the way to little things that we can do to our cars before we get ready to pay some shade tree mechanic. Exercises that'll stop you from growing that ridiculous outer, you know, omentum is what it's called.
The gut.
And it's not even just the gut. It's that big piece of fat that's right outside of the gut. It's supposed to protect the gut, not double in size of the gut. We have so much to teach. And one of the things we're going to put on that list, Lee, is what we tapped on. We just tapped it today. We don't never dig hard enough. We just tapped it. The male ego and what it's going to take for us to stop wasting time trying to get to know y'all. Why does it take so long? Just stop being, well, who are you hiding from? What are you hiding? What? We know you a pervert. You a man. We know it. Come on. What are you hiding? You play with money? We know. It's America. We all playing with money. What are you trying to hide? Come on. We know. Okay? So whatever that is, what you say you have to wait to lift the veil, to pull the curtain back, this waiting we're doing to get to know each other, that, I like for us to address that. And what it means to make somebody do a circle and dance move just to get to know you.
There's a lot to the male persona. I don't think that enough of us are comfortable in it to just roll out and be like, oh, this is who I am. This is what I'm about. Most of us aren't there. We just aren't, you know. And that's a huge societal problem. But it's worth having the conversation. So I'll see what I can put together for that. That's a good challenge, without a doubt. I'll see what I can put together.
A classroom session, say, hey, little kids, hey, whoever's listening out there, go get your children. Listen, kids, go get a piece of paper. This is how to balance a checkbook, okay? No, we don't write checks no more. You keep swipe until they tell you no. That is fiscal responsibility.
Look, I'm at the bank yesterday, and I'm like, yo, look, check it. I came in here to get a replacement card because I wanted the tap function, right, the contactless joint. My card is being declined more using the tap than anything. I'm like, dog, like, where can I use this thing at, right? So I go back yesterday, and I'm like, yo, I want a new card because this is just ridiculous. So the young lady, the teller, is like, yo, look, calm down. It may be a situation where systems just have not caught up to our technology yet and aren't recognizing our cards. Just give it a little while, boom, boom. So I said, okay, look, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep the card. I say January, February. If it's not improved, then I'm going to swap it out because it's ridiculous. But, again, I got it not for the convenience factor, but I got it so it's not wearing the card down. Because, you know, the more you slide that card, the faster the card gets worn down. And then you have to replace it. So that's the reason I wanted to.
We need to have a class on how to book a flight. Do you know there's people who ain't never left? They don't know how to get no flight. They have to wait on. They don't know what to do to leave. They know how to get on a bus.
I'm always going somewhere.
They know, but they don't know who to talk to leave. They don't know. They can't. Huh? How do you do that? It's a mystery. How do you leave?
We need to educate
our people like it's, 1866, and it's time for us to begin Reconstruction. We need to be in that mode. We need to be in hyper-informative mode so that we can start bridging this gap, because I do believe the statement goes, my people suffer for what they do not know.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, look, I was loving the pictures that you posted of your classroom and stuff and the school in general. I was digging that. I wanted to say that to you publicly. Great work. Continue to do what you do. Is there anything that you wanted to hit on before we get out?
One of the things our school does, and it's the only school that teaches about Africana history, African history in the state of Missouri, that has it embedded and infused into the curriculum. It's the only one in Missouri. Of that curriculum, it chooses a pivotal point in our history for that month as a theme. This month we are discussing Marcus Garvey and the ancestors that influenced him and the ancestors that he influenced. And let me tell you something. If you ever want to, you know how we find people and we're like, I didn't even know that person was that
right.
Profound. And Marcus Garvey, okay, the more you try to learn about him, there's still just yet another layer. Trance right now with the amount of organization and nation building he was able to condense, because while we would say that he built an organization, what he did was consolidated organizations. He was able to do what so many can't, and that's unite under one ideology. And that ideology turned out to be one God, one aim, one destiny. And so, just to start with one God, when we believe in all these gods, right?
Right.
If you gather 100 black people, they believe in at least 5 different gods. But Mark is like, well, yeah, call it what you want. One God, whatever you know, we decide that is one aim, our own, the betterment, you know, the improvement of African Americans and Africans around the world, and one destiny on this whole globe. You're not going to get an American destiny, a South American, you know, Brazilian African destiny, a Caribbean African destiny. We are all linked on this planet with one destiny. And just like the revolution of Haiti sparked the revolution, you know, around the world, it's going to happen with that, with our technological advances. It's going to happen like that forever. And I just want everybody to hear that. I want those who have the improvement of African people around the world in their mindset at all, I need them to go back and study the works of Marcus Garvey and what he was able to, who influenced him, and all the people. We have the whole Harlem Renaissance. Those are almost all Garveyites. You understand? All of these people that he was able to infuse with this spirit of oneness. And, you know, and this is at a time when we find in babies in suitcases and all this other crazy stuff, people shooting up schools and all this foolishness, right? Oneness. One God, one aim, one destiny. That's what I have to say.
And you get the last word. Look, Fanny, we appreciate you listening live or later. We appreciate our guests. We appreciate the board. The board was good today. Thank you for that. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and our guests. Please support her. Again, Katrina Oliver Thomas. The name of the book is 10 Things I Learned When My Husband Had a Girlfriend. 10 Things I Learned When My Husband Had a Girlfriend. That's not me because I've never married a dude before. I'm just saying that's the name of her book. You all be safe. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy some of this warm weather. It's football time, baby. Until next week, be good. Be safe. We love you, and the damn thing you can do about it.